It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. You know, if the Golden Globe showed again on Sunday night that men in Hollywood are on notice about their behavior and their unshared grip on power, what about every other industry where the abuses and power imbalances don't involve famous men who are going to make news? We've asked that question a number of times on this show. It's being asked elsewhere, of course. And what should the world expect from men in power who haven't engaged in misconduct? New York Magazine's food site, GrubStreet.com, is out with an article called What Should We Expect from the Men Who Run Restaurants? The author, Sierra Tischgart, joins us to begin the show today. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having me.
Can you start, for people not steeped in the restaurant world, which is such a specific and particular world, with a line in your piece, restaurants are egregiously degrading and hostile work environments by anyone's standards, and that it has appalling norms. Can you set the scene for us?
Yes. So the restaurant industry has the highest rates of reported sexual assault of any industry. So in this Me Too movement, where we're looking now well beyond entertainment, this is one of the most egregious places where this occurs. But beyond sexual harassment, restaurants are highly abusive workplaces. It is typical for chefs to be screaming, which we now might define as verbally abusive. There's often even physical violence. I do think it's gotten better with a new wave of chefs over the years, but it's rooted in this brigade system that's very military-driven and aggressive.
And on where the power lies, we heard at the Golden Globes how only one woman has ever won their Best Director award, Barbara Streisand, and that was 34 years ago. If the director is like the chef of the movie industry, how similar is that power landscape in the restaurant industry?
Very, very similar. It is an industry that's very hard for women to break through and to retain them. There's basically no parental leave policies in addition to all of the harassment that occurs. There really is a small group of men concentrated at the top, and that cycle continues. There's a line in my piece that I quote from a chef, Amanda Cohen, who runs the restaurant Dirt Candy, that they continue to get the investments, they continue to get the press. It's just this cycle that is hard to break.
Right. I actually made a note of that quote from your piece to read at some point. So since you brought it up, I'll read it now. She said, "Women are second-class citizens in the restaurant world. We have less access to investors and are perceived as less profitable investments because in large part we have smaller profiles than male chefs. We get nominated for fewer awards. Our restaurants get reviewed less often and we get less press coverage than men." So that's really where the rubber hits the road. I mean, that's so structural.
Yes.
And that's so much harder in a way than stamping out sexual assault, because at least assault is seen as illegitimate, at least in theory. These are just the collective individual judgments that she's talking about of investors and awards judges and people like that who probably think they're just being objective. So how do the baseline structural things really begin to change?
It's difficult. I think that in the piece, I talked about how most male chefs haven't spoken about this, and a few spoke to me, and I really analyzed why I thought that the responses weren't adequate, though I feel fortunate that they did at least try to speak on this. I think what makes them so uncomfortable is that we don't know how to define abuse in restaurants right now. Sexual harassment clearly and suddenly wrong in our society, as well as in restaurants. But what about all of the other forms of abuse and the ways in which they inflict power? I think setting some clear guidelines. I would love to see some sort of commission form and that at least tries to state what the code of ethics is and which restaurants are striving to abide by this. One thing I mentioned is that parental leave policies would be huge. A lot of people keep citing that these restaurants don't have HR, which doesn't seem to me to be the answer, because the restaurants that do have HR often have one person who really just reports to the to the chef.
So listeners, if you work or have worked in the restaurant industry, women and men both, we invite you to call in and say how degrading and hostile the work environments are, to use our guest's words, how sexist or even sexually violent in the context of that. And to the extent that any of this is the case, what do you think will bring real change? And men, maybe chefs, owners of restaurants, what's your responsibility in this? What specific things can you do if you're saying, yes, I sympathize, this is wrong, it should change? What can men do? What are you doing, as well as what are women doing and calling to be done? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for my guest, Sierra Tishgart, senior editor of the New York Magazine food site, Grub Street, 212-433-9692. And you conclude for yourself in the article that there is no systemic change without male involvement. And so you set out to interview leading men in the restaurant industry who've been conspicuously silent on sexual assault. Who were you reaching out to, and what did you want to hear from them?
Yes. So much of the story focuses on my interview with Danny Meyer, who is one of the few people who agreed to speak to me and said that he is really trying to sit back and listen right now and look at his own company. What a lot of men echoed to me is that they don't want to come off as hypocritical when they know that there have probably been some infractions within their own workplaces, which is fair. But I think now a couple months have passed since Weinstein, and the quietness is starting to feel like a problem, and that it's only going to make this worse in the restaurant industry. So I think that one thing I would like to see, and that I don't think we have, is more accountability here, is saying, yes, I'm part of this power structure that has enabled this, even if my intentions have been good. In my restaurants, this has happened, and this is exactly how we've dealt with it, or this is how we should have dealt with it, very specifically. And that's hard. That's making an example of yourself. But I think when you're in that position as a leader and you've been presenting yourself like that for years, that carries so much weight.
And one male restaurateur told you anonymously that just as there is pressure on women not to come forward with their stories, there is pressure against industry leaders, I assume he means male ones, coming
yes.
forward to take the moral high ground because you put a target on yourself, he said. I mean, that's a pretty remarkable statement. How would male, quote, industry leaders make themselves vulnerable to what by speaking up about inequities?
Yes. I mean, it is vulnerable. Someone tweeted back at the story, Danny speaks and he becomes an example. I would also like to say that there are a lot of women who have spoken up in the industry who I name at the beginning of the story. Jen Ag, Amanda Cohen, who I mentioned, Allison Robicelli, there's several. And so it's also this interesting moment, and myself as part of the press needs to look at this. It's like, who do we consider leaders? And do we need to rethink that in this moment?
So you're right. Anthony Bourdain rightfully owned up to enabling bro culture. Tom Colicchio told me he felt he's received the cold shoulder from peers since writing an open letter to cooks. So what does the cold shoulder mean? I mean, does it mean men want to protect sexual misconduct or something more ambiguous?
I think it's a little more ambiguous that men want to protect their hostile, abusive work environments in general. I think there are certainly some men who have acted out over the years and are probably fearful that this is now going to emerge right now. But I think it's more protecting this abusive structure that they've put into place, and realizing that the ripple effects of this could impact that.
One really remarkable anecdote to me in your piece is chefs appear fearful to speak, you're right, because even if they haven't assaulted anyone, the means through which they've expressed their power could now get called into question. One restaurant owner defended screaming at cooks, saying it's necessary to make them better at their jobs If that's no longer permissible, he said, his food will suffer. Really? I mean, how widespread is that belief and, you know, that practice of chefs screaming at cooks in the genuine belief that it's necessary to produce the quality food that their job is to produce?
Yeah, I think there's been somewhat of a recent generational shift, but for the chefs who came up, I would say like in the early 2000s, they were still part of that system where there was so much screaming and aggression, and that includes some physical violence. I think the chefs it's still a huge problem. I would like to think that there's been some progress there, but it's rampant. And what, you know, and these restaurants, it's interesting to think of from the perspective of a customer, because why do you go to these restaurants? You want joy and some fantasy, and you kind of want to be in this bubble that's not your home with the dirty dishes. And, you know, how much do they know or care about these environments? And also, how much pressure, you know, this should be a joyful endeavor. Like, when did it become that this became so life or death in kitchens? There are real stakes in that you are actually putting food in people's bodies, and there's risk there. And certainly in this cutthroat business environment, it's hard to last. But like, when did this isn't the military? Many chefs, I think, would scoff at that statement that I make. And I take their work seriously, of course, but it's gotten so out of hand to me.
Even football coaches have changed generationally to where they don't primarily scream at their players or as much as they did, out of a change in belief about what actually motivates people to their, you know, to their best accomplishments.
Yes.
So if it can happen at football, it should be able to happen in the restaurant industry. Mm-hmm. My guest, Sierra Tischgart, senior editor of New York Magazine's food site, Grub Street. Her new article, What Should We Expect from Men Who Run Restaurants? And Daniel in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling in, Daniel. Hi.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good.
I was telling your screener here that, you know, the males involved in all sides of this industry are really out of hand. I just had to let go of a sous chef for sexual harassment. He was a millennial who said he'd had freedom of speech, that I had no right to let him go over that. He also refused to sign a sexual harassment policy. So that's part of what goes on. My wife is the chef and co-owner. She's had to deal with men who we've hired who've come in from different culinary schools and really have negative attitudes about women and their ability to cook, constantly trying to correct her, even though she's been written up in great reviews and whatnot, and our clientele really appreciates her cooking. But I run the front house, and I also have a problem with customers, male customers that come in. And we have all female waitresses, and they talk down to them. I've had to ask a couple people to leave who have said horrible derogatory things to the women. And everyone knows they even tip women less. So we have a cultural problem, if you ask me. And I've been accused of being too sensitive for the girls, and we'll call them, or the waitresses. And it's just not true. I believe in respecting all people's rights, and I also expect that when people come to eat at our fine restaurant, they're coming for a wonderful experience, and there's no room for negative. I've even had people yell at a few of these girls over the most ridiculous things. And, you know, alcohol is involved, too, because we serve fine wine. So you're kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't. But I think we're not digging deep enough when we don't look at everything. And finally, I have purveyors who have said to my wife, let me talk to the man of the restaurant. And I've had to get on the phone, and I've even cut off dealing with a couple of purveyors. And I've told them, this is my wife. She is the one in charge here. She is the face of this restaurant, and you're going to talk with her, and you're going to talk to her in a decent manner. And a lot of these purveyors have been around for years. One of our purveyors who's given us our fish, they've been around for 120-some years, and they still talk this way to female chefs. So I really think it's a big, huge cultural male problem that we have. And I don't know how we get to the bottom of it.
Very candid. Sierra, anything that you, as the food journalist in the room, might want to ask Daniel?
Yeah, I'm glad that you are taking action. I'm curious, in terms of the harassment of servers, if you've considered abolishing tipping. I know that financially that can be quite risky for a restaurant. If you've considered that.
No, and I don't think that has much to do with it. I think it's more of a male feeling like, oh, here comes a woman to serve me. This is mother or something strange. And here comes a man to serve me. And they don't give him the same grief. Hmm. I mean, I had a male the other week ask our waitress for a certain dessert. It's Italian. We're a French California restaurant. And she said, we don't make that here. And he just started chastising her. You don't know what this is. You don't know what a tiramisu. We don't do those, sir. Blah, 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 blah. Banging his fist on the table. And I had to come over and ask him to leave. And I don't think tipping has anything to do with it. I totally disagree with people who think somehow tipping is some sort of, negative situation that it creates. I don't. I don't have any. It's not mm-hmm. the tipping.
Daniel,
it's not the tipping.
Thank you so much for your call. And again, your candor as a restaurant owner. You support the Danny Meyer no tipping innovation as a good stroke for equality, right?
Yes.
Because?
I do think there's also the sanctuary restaurants movement. The woman behind this has touched on that. But I do think that it gives customers a lot of power that they can... That can take on some ugly forms and feeling like they're suddenly the boss of these servers. I also think just generally the structure, I mean, it's difficult because prices have to go up and that can have a whole ripple effect. But, you know, I think there's so much wage theft, lawsuits, and discrepancies between how kitchen staff are paid and servers are paid.
That's
and
one of the biggest things,
yes.
Right? That's one of the things that Danny Meyer, when he came on the show to talk about the policy, emphasized, was that, you know, everybody's working hard in the restaurant, including the servers who the customer sees and tips, and including the kitchen staff who the customer doesn't see or tip. But why should the server be rewarded more just because of their front of the house and the other one's back of the house?
Yep. And shouldn't Danny be their boss and not the customer who walks in and gets to act like a king and often abuses that power? And statistically, it is shown, despite that owner's feelings, that the data shows that this curbs harassment in restaurants. So there's real numbers to back that up at this point.
Harry in Greenwich Village, you're on WNYC. Hi, Harry.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I've took over a restaurant a couple of years ago. I'm a graduate of the French culinary. I've been involved, but I'd never run a restaurant. For 30 years prior, I've run a series of technology companies, and it's very shocking when you come into a restaurant to see some of these cultural aspects that are accepted, yelling at people, and definitely a lot of it is this deep embedded culture, as the prior person had spoken about. It was really it's very eye-opening. I think one of the biggest issues that comes up is that a great number of the staff, particularly the kitchen staff, come from very diverse cultures that are also very male-centric. And the kitchen, those things really create a lot of issues between the front of the house and the back of the house, and also just the way that they approach people and approach each other. And I think that's a real big part of it.
What can you do as someone who now runs this restaurant to change any of that?
Well, what I've done, and I've done in all my businesses, I've been an entrepreneur for 30 years, and what I've done is I really have a zero tolerance policy for certain things. We had to abolish drinking within the restaurant, the treatment of people, yelling at people. It's very difficult. We had to let some longtime staff go, and it's been a lot of training and talking, and it took us the last 2 years to sort of change the approach. But the only way really to do it in certain situations like this is really to have a zero tolerance policy for it.
Harry, thank you so much for your call. So there's at least two pretty good examples, it sounds like, of men running restaurants who are trying to improve the culture.
Yes.
You get very specific in your article about what needs to be done structurally in this paragraph near the end, and I'm just going to read it for everybody so that they hear how specific you get on how many bullet points. This change can and should take different shapes and forms. More restaurants can implement parental leave policies. You mentioned that one before. More backers can partner with women and invest in their projects. Male chefs can close their businesses for a day to draw awareness and dollars to the female-run ones nearby. Oh, helping the competition, huh? That's a step.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Men can refuse to participate in food events and competitions, like many sponsored by S. Pellegrino, that lack diversity. Operators can form a commission and create a clear code of conduct and ethics that they encourage others to commit to, similar to the sanctuary restaurants movement. They can pay workers full minimum wage or abolish tipping altogether, as we discussed, which has a direct impact on the harassment of servers. And then you point out that a burger at diner comes with a 5-inch by 5-inch attention catching note card that reads, "In an effort to make our industry a more sustainable home for all who work in it, we are now a gratuity-free restaurant." So that's telling the customer what they're doing and why they're doing it.
Yes.
And you conclude that paragraph, "As a customer, I'd also like to know which restaurants are at least striving to be abuse-free." How can they do that? How can they do that without seeming or being self-serving in, like, a card at your table that says where, you know, a gender equal, abuse free workplace, making that claim for themselves,
yes,
even if it's male owned.
Yes, I agree that it's a difficult thing to do. I think it's hearing, hearing and really and seeing action and commitment for more of these restaurant owners. And you know, I've thought a lot about does that just, I had a few reach out to me yesterday, be like, "I'm here to speak," and I was like, "Well, okay, like this, like that's nice." Also, like, I can't just be your mic, you know, like there's other means of which to state how you feel and think to your staff and to your customers, and aren't just through press. But I think starting to articulate and form groups and realize that, yes, having one business carry this on their back is difficult and awkward, but trying to find solidarity in the industry to commit to code of ethics, I think, would be a good start.
And you're really calling on men to some degree to be more aware, to ask the question if institutional or industry-wide things that they're participating in do have gender bias and refuse to participate on ethical grounds, like your line that men can refuse to participate in food events and competitions that lack diversity. Well, first men have to think to ask the question rather than just enter their work. So that's another level of, you know, sort of proactive awareness, which people can do if they decide to do it.
Yes, that actually seems to me, of the various examples, and there are many more that I gave, of like one that's actually quite feasible, and I don't think that difficult. Like, I gave an example earlier in the piece of Eric Repair, who spoke to me and said, you know, "This is horrible, what's going on, it's horrible." And he used this line, "We cannot put our heads in the sand." And then, sort of funny enough, he is spending this week in the Cayman Islands for his annual cookout, which is this big sponsored, you know, flashy event, the Ritz-Carlton, with Bourdain and Jose Andres and all these talented celebrity chefs. There's 13 in the group and there's one woman. And it's often the same woman, Dominique Crenn, who's incredibly talented but is chosen over and over and over. There's certainly other women to pick from there. Eric Repair can say all he wants that he's horrified, but like one out of 13 is a bad look.
Carrie in Jersey City, you're on WNYC. Hi, Carrie. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Ryan. So just on the Eric Repair, I'd also like to mention that La Bernadette is still, to this day, one of the only restaurants that does not hire female captains and female wait staff. Now, they do have
sommeliers. They can do that as a matter of policy?
Yeah. They've gotten away with it. I was one of the very first female captains in the city. I've worked in the industry for about 20 years, so I've seen a lot, and I can verify that, yeah, they're still doing that. They do have female sommeliers, thank goodness, but there's the wait staff. No, most of their female wait staff works in the wine bar. So that's how they can get away with that. And amongst other things.
There's an assignment for you, potentially, Sierra, at Grub Street, is verify that.
Yeah.
But, Carrie, go ahead. You actually originally called to make a different point, right?
Well, yes, and you sort of touched on it. And I do, I totally respect what your guest has written, but I do differ, because my husband, who was then my boyfriend at the time, worked for, we met in the restaurant industry early on in the 2000s, 1997, and he worked for a very famous restaurant, who shall remain nameless, and he had a very, the restaurant had a very famous chef. Now that chef became famous at that restaurant and proceeded to charge everything from his dry cleaning to his new clothes to all of his limousines. He could no longer take the subway. He had to take limousines, all of his airplanes, his personal promotion, like his PR, his flights. Everything got charged to the restaurant. Now, my husband was in charge of doing the books at night. He was the night manager. So he would see everything coming in being billed from the chef to the restaurant group who managed all this. In the meantime, what you have is you have sauciers and gros manger, like in the kitchen, who are barely making any money. And now you have a movement by Danny Meyer who, you know, bless his heart, I think he's trying really hard, but he himself does not want to really look at the essence of the problem and the root of the problem. The root of the problem is, I'm sorry, but if you're Danny Meyer and you have 12 successful restaurants all over the world and you can't afford to pay your Mexican salad guy an appropriate wage, there's something wrong. And it's not the fault of the waiter or the waitress. The other side of the waiter or the waitress thing, from the people that work at the Modern very well, the staff is having issues there because they're getting inexperienced staff who now want to go and make as much money as the experienced staff. And guess what? The tipping isn't reflective of their experience. And they get off by giving the customer a lot poorer service, and they're getting more complaints about the service.
So that's a lot.
My point is, if Danny Myers has 12 restaurants and he can afford to pay for his famous chef to fly all over the world, and all the restaurants do it, why can't he afford to give his staff an appropriate wage and leave the hell alone the waiters and waitresses' money that they make? Like, and they work really hard too. Some of them have to do double and triple shifts. So,
Carrie,
you know, it's the only industry that I know. Like, you can't tell a teacher to go share their money with the janitor.
I hear you. Thank you very much for all of that. And Sierra, what are you thinking?
That there's a lot that you touched on there that is problematic. And I think actually, like, this whole celebrity chef culture has really played into this. That this work a decade ago, maybe earlier, was seen as like blue collar work and wasn't like respected or valued in our society. And now it's become this like sexy television chef thing that's led to even a greater discrepancy in salaries and you know, visibility and promotion, when really look at the labor that's actually making these restaurants go day to day.
And on the labor,
yeah,
in the restaurant business, the bottom of the food chain, no pun intended, is really, really low, including a lot of undocumented workers who are really vulnerable to abuse with no recourse, who work in pretty gritty kitchen jobs in many cases. How much does the gender-oriented Me Too movement intersect with the immigrant rights movement?
Oh, I think it's a really interesting point. That's that's critical to this. And also recognizing, you know, beyond gender and women, that how few, how the lack of diversity in restaurant ownership, in terms of racial diversity, it's perhaps even a bigger problem in that way. And I think also something, I think one of the callers touched on it, but like, oh, the financials, like these restaurants, part of this is that like, they're not set up to run like proper businesses. They're like, you know, they're not paying immigrants fair wages. They are, or like, you know, if they've hired refugees who don't have paperwork, it's like, they're a mess financially. And that often is reflected in terrible payment, for laborers.
You know, that very specific list that you put in your article of things men in power in the restaurant industry can do to break the stranglehold on power reminded me of something that I read the other day in Lindy West's column in the New York Times.
Yes, I loved her story.
Which, that article was called Why Fixing Sexism Isn't Women's Work, and focusing on Hollywood, she wrote this to men. You know what you can do to help? Everything. How about Matt Damon refuses to show up to work until his female co-stars are paid as much as he is? How about Jimmy Fallon refuses to interview anyone who has been credibly accused of sexual assault or domestic violence? How about Robert Downey Jr. relentlessly points out microaggressions against female contemporaries until he develops a reputation for being difficult, and every day on Twitter, 4,000 eighth graders call him an SJW cuck? How about Harvey Weinstein anonymously donates $100 million to that legal defense fund and then melts into the fog as though he never existed? How about hundreds of male movie stars spend months developing a large-scale action plan to help female farm workers battle systemic gender inequality? And that's not even all of them. They go on from there. So you and she are getting very specific on things, at least some of the things, that men can do.
Yes.
So is the bottom line that articles like yours and Lindy West's are calling on men to step up and show leadership and alliance with women in their various industries, not just in their words, but by their actions, and that we're really at the early stages of even defining those actions. So people like you and Lindy need to list them like that, and then pressure needs to stay on.
Mm-hmm. It does. It does. I think it was difficult for me to think about, because yes, there's all this talk, especially in social media, of like everyone staying silent. Where are the chefs here? Where are they saying? And I say in the story, I don't want a well-meaning but pat statement. I mean, that's fine maybe in the meantime, but that's got to be backed up by action. Like, what do we want them to say, and what do we want them to do, and how much are we weighing each? And to me, you know, the talk is significant. Like, it is meaningful, and it is lacking to me in restaurants. But the talk only works if they're also backing it up by action.
Sierra Tischgart, New York Magazine's Grub Street food site senior editor. Grubstreet.com is that site. Her new article, What Should We Expect from the Men Who Run Restaurants? Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay tuned.